It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The events of this summer have brought home the need for a different, better, more complete approach to teaching Black history in our schools in a powerful way. This is not a new need, and correcting the problem isn't a new effort. But the raised awareness of this moment does create an opportunity for educators to learn and implement change. This week, the Carter Center for K-12 Black History Education at the University of Missouri is holding their third annual Teaching Black History Conference online this year. This hour, we'll explore some of the topics that people in attendance can learn about, including how white teachers can do a better job and how poorly designed or implemented curriculum can hurt students of color. My first guest today is LeGarrett King. He is Isabella Wade Lida and Paul Lida Professor of Education and founding director of the Carter Center for K-12 Black History Education at the University of Missouri. LeGarrett, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Sorry to have computer trouble. You're just about to launch an online conference. That feels a little bit scary in the moment. But this conference, this is your third annual. You were already faced with the challenge of taking that online because of the COVID-19 pandemic. And then you also are at a moment where suddenly a lot of people are very interested in the work that you're doing. Tell me about the conference and how it's looking.
Well, the conference, of course, is the third conference that we had. It's a historic conference because it's the first one we're having online. But this year's theme is Black Her Stories, and we're going to focus on the historical contributions of Black women, which has been severely silenced in the history curriculum and just history throughout. So we are very excited to have over 65 presenters and over 800 people who have already registered for the conference.
Wow, over 800 people. And there is still an opportunity for teachers to get involved?
Yes, on the conference website, they can register, up until 9 o'clock on tomorrow.
Wow. Well,
I was
looking through all of the many opportunities, the many learning opportunities that are going on at the conference. There's so much great stuff to learn. But I want to focus for just a moment on that overarching theme, Herstory, writing women back into Black history. Tell me why you chose that theme.
Well, again, Black women have been silenced, erased in the historical narrative. Even when we begin to start talking about Black history, right? Black history mainly focuses on Black men who are Christian, who are middle class, who have these certain beliefs, right? But when we look throughout history, Black women have been the driving force of not only the Black community, but also the world in the ways in which they help, particularly in the U.S., help challenge U.S. democracy and democratic ideas. And it's extremely important for us to really understand Black women's contributions, because we will never fully understand history until we understand the contributions of Black women.
In making sure that these stories are told, a lot of time has elapsed between some of the contributions that the Black women that you're talking about have made and now, and it feels like we've done so much to obscure these stories. Is it difficult to unearth them?
No, it's not. If we pay real close attention to history, right, and who are the major players in various different aspects, it's pretty simple to give these Black women their credit. For example, recently, when the Black Lives Matter movement began, the three lady founders saw this erasure happening throughout the Black Lives Matter movement, right? And without really focusing on them, so they had to go out and develop their website and get their names out there to ensure that people understood that, hey, Black women created this hashtag. Black women are the ones that are pushing, for change in all these particular aspects. So I think we have to be very careful, all right, when we look at historical records and really figure out, okay, well, who are the Black women in front of this and behind this and on the side of it?
We have talked before about how Black History gets pigeonholed into Black History Month in February, and that creates an opportunity to write a lot of Black history out of the rest of the curriculum if we pigeonhole it just in that month of February. So give me an idea of what you're talking about when you talk about writing Black history into the curriculum. You're not just talking about what we teach in February.
Oh, no. We are talking about systematically changing the ways in which we understand history. For one, I would like to get rid of the why, right? Because why denotes a singular narrative. And when we talk about the plurality of U.S. history, we're really talking about the histories that really help us understand the various different people that make up our country. Many ways, teachers need to reconsider that we're not teaching a curriculum, we're teaching citizens. And by teaching citizens, we have to think about what are the most important historical moments for us to have to understand the U.S. In its complexity. And it's very dangerous when our citizens only learn about half of the country through our history curriculum.
We have also seen this summer in particular, but always, there seems to be this feeling of when we teach about the civil rights movement, it is history. It's something that happened in the 1960s, and then it was successful, and then it was over. Do we also need to stop pigeonholing that part of our history and look at the broader arc over time and the things that are continuing today?
Yes, we definitely need to connect historical moments together. Without understanding what happened in the past, we cannot understand what happens in the present, right? So using that example of the 1960s civil rights movement, right, after 1968, it's kind of like, hey, racism is solved, right? Right. So then when we have these particular movements such as we are having now, people are confused and like, wait a minute, I thought everything was hunky-dory. Hey, we passed this in the 1960s, so everything is fine, without really tying into, well, what have been the problems throughout history that are still continuing, right? So, for example, the 1619 Project through the New York Times and Nicole Hannah Jones does this, right? It centers this notion of enslavement, right, and the institutions that followed enslavement to the present, right? So now we can kind of see this lineage of, okay, well, this happened here, and we can kind of see the connection. So yes, connecting these historical eras to the contemporary are extremely important for us to understand what's happening today.
When you think about trying to integrate Black history into the curriculum, there, I think a lot of teachers may have trouble thinking about, okay, how do I redo what I'm teaching? So is this a simple matter of we need to write more complete textbooks and make sure that those get into the classrooms? What do you see as the next step once people understand, okay, this is a problem and we need to fix it?
Good question. The textbooks in the curriculum, that's one issue. But a curriculum is just as good as the teachers that are implementing the curriculum, right? So we can have the best, the most nuanced, the most effective, the most critical curriculum, but if we don't have teachers that, number one, have the content knowledge enough to kind of explore, right, this new curriculum, and number two, the pedagogical content knowledge, right, the ways in which we understand the curriculum and how we can teach that curriculum based on that aspect of that subject, I think is extremely important. So more professional development for teachers and in the ways in which we really understand Black history. I do want to go back, and you mentioned this notion of integration, right? But I think it's very important for listeners and educators, students to understand that one of the major problems, right, the major axiom is that we have the saying that Black history is American history. And in many ways, that's a fallacy based on how we are presenting U.S. history at this particular moment, right? Yes, we understand the sentiments, but Black history is different from the traditional narrative that we state. Black history has its own entry points. Black history has its own people, and we understand those people differently than the traditional narrative. So when we say integration, sometimes that has hindered how we teach Black history because we are still trying to produce this certain type of narrative, and Black history in many ways is contentious and goes away from the progressive American history narrative that we promote in our classrooms.
So it's not a part of trying to fit more stories into that narrative, but upending the narrative itself?
Yes, it's about, so for example, right, something simple as July 4th, 1776, or July 4th is Independence Day, when at that particular moment, 20%, 25% of your population was not independent, or they were not talking about those particular individuals, right, as Independence Day. So broadening the ways in which we understand even simple concepts as independence is extremely important. And then also, even when we look at how freedom is fought for, right, within Black historical structures, we promote this notion of nonviolence. Well, freedom throughout history has never been nonviolent, right? This country was built on violence, the Revolutionary War, right? But for some strange reason, whenever we talk about non-white people, right, is always this approach of nonviolence. But every war that we have fought in this country was in the name of violence. So
we're gonna have to take a break, and we'll pick this up in just a moment. No, I'm talking with LeGarrette King. He's of the Carter Center for K-12 Black History. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The third annual Teaching Black History Conference begins tomorrow. This is put on by the Carter Center for K-12 Black History Education at the University of Missouri, and it's taking place online this year. The theme of the conference is Teaching Black Her Stories, but there are opportunities for educators to learn all kinds of fascinating things about teaching Black history and how to do a better job implementing that in their classrooms. With me now is LeGarrette King. He is the Isabella Wade Lyda and Paul Lyda Professor of Education at the University of Missouri and the founding director of the Carter Center for K-12 Black History Education. We're going to bring another guest into the conversation here in just a moment. But LeGarrette, just before the break, we were talking about how we really have to rethink how we teach history in the United mm-hmm. States, because if we try to just insert this history mm-hmm. that has been left out, insert Black history into the narrative, we can't really do any of the history justice.
Yes, we lose meaning, right, for various different historical groups, right? I think what we try to do here in the U.S. is promote this aspect of historical uniformity, right? So all racialized groups had the same history. They responded to the same, they responded the same way through historical moments, and that's just not true. So in efforts to really transform the history curriculum, we have to transform the trajectory of the U.S. history curriculum.
I do want to bring our next guest into the conversation. Her name is Breanne Pitts, and she's leading a session at the conference called White Teachers on Teaching Black History. She is instructional coach with Sun Prairie Area Schools and works at the elementary level, partnering with teachers and classrooms to develop new instructional plans and curriculum. And she just completed her PhD at the University of Wisconsin-Madison. Hello, Breanne.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And of course, a problem that we often talk about in our culture is that we don't have enough teachers of color. But that doesn't mean that we can't teach Black history and a more complete history in our classrooms anyway. Breanne, in focusing on white teachers teaching Black history, tell me why you decided that was going to be your area of focus.
Absolutely. So attending the University of Wisconsin, I had the pleasure of studying under Dr. Carl Grant, who was speaking in a Black intellectual thought class while at the same time I've been teaching in these elementary schools. And during Black History Month a few years ago, I was in a classroom where a white teacher said to her first grade classroom, "Why isn't there a White History Month?" while teaching a lesson on Rosa Parks. And it got me thinking about the critical necessity of evaluating my own practice as a white teacher and my positionality when instructing students of color and a multiracial society, and was I doing it justice? So I began to focus on the question of what were we teaching? How are we teaching Black history, especially in and around Black History Month? As I view that to be a time that for many of my colleagues, white colleagues in particular, we see it as a safe, sterile, and supported opportunity to teach about Black history. So,
an environment where it would be hard to go wrong. Do you feel like there's a lot of fear about teaching Black history outside of that environment?
I do personally. And my recent research has been around a majority white suburban school district in the upper Midwest, where 94% white teachers lead the classrooms. And we focused on what teachers were teaching and sort of their philosophies around it. And the findings suggest that although over 70% of these teachers are teaching Black history, only about 28% of the teachers feel prepared to do so. And so they experience fear of content, fear of pushback, and also fear of letting go of the Eurocentric and marginalizing histories that we ourselves were taught in schools.
Have you found that teachers are worried about teaching this because they don't feel supported by their school districts in teaching this?
So I found three significant barriers in my recent study, which was a 3-year ethnography of a suburban school and teachers across K-12 districts. And three primary barriers got in their way in terms of teaching Black history. And again, I was focusing on Black History Month, but this could be generalized to the majority of their Black history instruction across the year. One was their own efficacy. Teachers fear that they don't have content knowledge, the ability, or the affect to do justice to teaching a fuller history, including Black Americans. Also, fear of those systems, as you mentioned, curricular supports. In the state of Wisconsin, there is not a prescribed curriculum for teaching Black history. And so using our social studies standards, those lessons, these critical discussions, are things that can be easily left behind.
So the teachers really feel like they're on their own if this is something that they feel is important to them.
Absolutely. Because it's not a mandated portion of the Wisconsin State teaching standards, it can be something that is inadvertently, in some cases, pushed to the side. But as I mentioned, many of my colleagues expressed fear of what parents might say, of how students will encounter the curriculum, and they continue to teach it in varyingly oppressive ways, as Dr. King's research has also illuminated.
You have also looked at teachers who are doing this well. You've seen successful trends in classrooms. Tell me what you've seen that works.
Absolutely. So over the course of these 3 years, I spent time with 12 teachers who were teaching Black history across the course of school years. And what I found is the teachers who were being successful, and by successful, I mean teaching Black history as more than, as Legarrette says, heroes and messiahs, as more than oppression and civil rights, as more than triumphs and, enslavement. These teachers had incredibly strong connections to their families and students of color. They integrated Black history and integrated, I want to trouble that term after hearing Legarrette recently. They created these contentious narratives that he was talking about. They taught their students to critically evaluate not only the texts in front of them and the histories that they were studying, but they taught them to question the instruction that they were receiving. These teachers, 11 of the 12 teachers were white. These teachers also troubled their own whiteness, and they were able to talk openly with their students and families about race, about oppression, and about the limitations of our educational system.
LeGarrette, yeah. I want to bring you back into the conversation here, because in founding the Carter Center for Black History Education, you have been there for teachers who are looking for this kind of information, looking for this kind of support. Can you give me an idea, over the years, have you seen a growing interest coming from white teachers?
Yes, I have. I believe many of the teachers, particularly white teachers, want to do well. But as Brianna kind of mentioned, right, is the content, is the systemic, you know, barriers to go there. But I do believe that I get tons of emails every single day, right, from teachers from all over the country asking what should they do, what curriculum resources they should use, you know. So I think there is this hunger, and it has been this hunger for a while now.
With this moment in our history, with this burgeoning civil rights movement of Black Lives Matter, I can imagine that there are many teachers who are realizing anew, or at least really in underlining their feelings, that they need to do a better job teaching this history. But I can also imagine that this is a moment of fear for some teachers as well. Brianne, I'll let you go first. How do you feel like the Black Lives Matter movement is affecting teachers and what they will be bringing into the classroom?
Well, I can give you some perspective from some of my participants who I've actually had the pleasure of connecting with over the last month, and specifically asking them questions around these topics, saying, you know, how has the current unrest since the death of George Floyd and Breonna Taylor, the Black Lives Matter movement, how will you bring this into your classroom? And one participant told me that she sees it as educational reparations, and that we white folks should be even more inclined to do something, to say something, to step out, because this is not just curriculum. Quoting this participant, it's life or death. And I believe I've heard LeGarrette say similar things. This is coming from a white teacher who herself admits to incredible vulnerability and fear and fragility, but she recognizes the importance of stepping outside of those concerns to make connections with students and families and teach a history that includes the incredible contributions of not just Black women, Black people, and people across our nation.
LeGarrette, what would you like to add to that, thinking about this moment in time and teachers going back to the classroom, at least virtually, here in a couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think people are realizing that we wouldn't need a Black Lives Matter movement if Black lives mattered in the classroom. And I think these you know, teachers are really, really focusing on the humanity, right, of Black people after seeing all these images online and throughout our media. And I think they are really extremely hungry, as, you know, evidence of the increase of attendance for the Black History Conference.
As Brianne was mentioning, in Wisconsin, there's no comprehensive Black history curriculum. LeGarrette, you have worked so hard to create resources for teachers, but school districts as well. Are you seeing more school districts or more states embracing a comprehensive curriculum?
Yes. I think that's the goal of many different state boards of education and school systems. The City of Philadelphia schools mandates Black history for graduation, and there are several different states that mandate Black history in their schools. I don't know how effective those states are in having accountability measures for these teachers and school districts, but there has been this approach. There's also been many different places like Jefferson County Public Schools in Kentucky that revamped their whole Black history, you know, curriculum to kind of connect to this framework I'm developing. And Black Star Rising is this Black history curriculum developed by Dr. Latasha Levy out of the University of Washington. So there's several different curriculum out there for, you know, school districts to to, you know, enact in their schools.
Does this feel like a moment where real change might be possible?
I hope so. I hope so. Throughout history, when you study the history of social movements, whenever there has been a Black social movement, there has also been a call for more Black history in the classrooms, and that could and that spans all the way to after the Civil War, right? The early 20th century, right? During the lynching movement, Carl G. Woodson, you know, said in his book *Miseducation of the Negro* that we wouldn't need an anti-lynching movement if lynching didn't start in the classrooms. We saw an uptick in the 1960s. Civil rights movement of more Black history in the courses. And now, right, we just need to have something that is sustainable.
Breanne, at this moment, in talking to white teachers, there are a lot of white teachers who are wanting to do better and probably are looking for resources. Coming up in just a few minutes, we're going to talk about how sometimes attempts at teaching Black history in the classroom can go very, very wrong and really damage students of color in particular. And I'm sure that there are teachers who are nervous about that. What would your advice for white teachers who want to do this better be?
My first bit of advice would be to join us at the Carter Center for K-12 Black History Education and the Teaching Black History Conference, because it's really through LeGarrette's mentorship, through the colleagues, through his Black History framework, that I've been able to begin to evaluate my own practice and work with teachers in my school and building to do better. I think that there are phenomenal resources in LeGarrette's writings, if people can look that up online, and again, connect with us at the Carter Center. In addition to that, I would highly recommend teachers looking, because there is so much out there. And as you expressed, some of it is incredibly problematic. There are other sites that have vetted these resources and provide them free of charge to teachers. So the Zinn Education Project being one, Howard Zinn, who wrote People's History of the United States, there's resources there for teachers to critically assess and evaluate Black history throughout the year. Also social justice books, where teachers can visit and review books that have been read by scholars and teachers alike and promoted either as being key resources that provide a liberatory expression of Black history or, again, serve that problematic ideal. So I would encourage teachers to go out there and look and to read, and more than anything, to reflect on themselves and to teach every child as if they were teaching their own.
We have just a minute before we need to go to a break. And as I mentioned, I'm going to be talking with Stephanie Jones coming up in just a little bit. She's assistant professor of education at Grinnell College, and she's going to talk about the panel that she'll be presenting. LeGarrette, a lot of teachers are going to be teaching through distance learning this fall. You're doing your conference through distance teaching. Are you hoping that this is also a moment to maybe learn how to really connect with people and students over the campus?
Yeah, although, you know, we would love to be face-to-face at the conference as well as in the classroom, but online platforms have really expanded, right, the ways in which we learn. So it's a learning experience for all, and hopefully we'll have a, very good process here.
Right. And you have more than 800 people already signed up for the conference. But if people are listening to this right now, educators are listening to this right now, they still can get involved, right?
Yes, they can go to our Facebook page and see the link to the conference, and they can register on the homepage.
All right. And there's a lot of great stuff coming up tomorrow and Saturday through the conference. LeGarrette King, thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you.
LeGarrette King is the founder of the Carter Center for K-12 Black History Education at the University of Missouri. He's also Associate Professor of Learning, Teaching, and Curriculum at the University of Missouri. Breanne Pitts, thank you so much for your time.
Thank you.
Breanne Pitts will be leading a session called White Teachers on Teaching Black History. She just finished her PhD in curriculum instruction at UW-Madison. And coming up in just a moment, I'll be talking with Stephanie Jones of Grinnell College about curriculum violence and how to teach Black history without harming the students in your classroom. What schools can do to really reach and support every student. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. The events of this summer have brought home the need for a different, better, more complete approach to teaching Black history in our schools in a powerful way. But it's not just an effort to make sure we're teaching more Black history. It's also an effort to include the important experiences and contributions of Black Americans without singling out or traumatizing Black students and other students of color. This week, the Carter Center for K-12 Black History Education at the University of Missouri is holding their third annual Teaching Black History Conference. This year, it is online. And my next guest is part of a panel called We Can't Breathe, Teaching Black History in an Anti-Black State. Stephanie Jones is an assistant professor of education at Grinnell College and the founder of MAP. Mapping Racial Trauma in Schools. Stephanie, welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
You have focused a great deal of your work on understanding how Black history is being taught now and also bringing attention to some of the ways that the present curriculum or the behavior of teachers creates a traumatic experience for their students of color. You use the term curriculum violence. Can you give me an example of what you're talking about?
Sure. Curriculum violence is something that I describe as a unintentional process in which teachers are engaging in teaching a part of a lesson or a unit plan, where they're having students experiment in ways that are emotionally traumatic for students to experience. So for example, there, it's an important part of our history to understand that this particular country was founded on the institution of slavery. And that's something that's in the curriculum here in the state of Iowa and all across the United States. Well, how does one teach about the institution of slavery is the question. Do you want students to understand slavery by making them go through simulated actions of it? Or do you want them to look at first-person narratives of this work? I think when it comes down to looking deep at curriculum violence, I think it's a result of not only teachers but also families not having real discussions about what it means to teach these things in ways that everyone can learn without being traumatized.
And I have such a hard time imagining, given my experience in education and the experience of my children, I have a really hard time imagining a teacher thinking that it's an okay idea to act out slavery in the classroom. But that is something that you have run across a lot, right?
A lot. Across the entire continental United States, actually. I mean, it doesn't mean if the teacher is in the South, if it makes a difference, or if they're in the Midwest. I think that there is a logical connection to wanting students to understand something through simulation experimentation, right? This idea of like, hey, when we go into a science lab and I want you to know how these chemicals react to each other, I don't want to necessarily just tell you it. I want to show you it as well. And somehow this has leaked into an idea of where we can do the same type of action, but with historically traumatic events and specifically slavery and even the Underground Railroad acts of resistance towards slavery. So it is hard to imagine that these things are happening. And those are some of the incidents that I described are ones that are on the very far end of the spectrum in terms of how, to be honest with you, how crazy it gets. But it could be an example of what happened to me as a young child. Like, you should pick cotton to see what it feels like. And that seems to be a less aggressive way of thinking about slavery, but it's still hurtful. Or we ask students to answer multiple choice questions or have them write responses to essays about why African Americans make better slaves as opposed to indigenous people. So it's these small interactions that we're grading students on that leaves marks on children's identities across the United States.
And all of those things that you mentioned were real mm-hmm. examples of things that have been done in the classroom or that were on tests that went beyond just one school's curriculum. And I do encourage Absolutely. People to follow your Mapping Racial Trauma in Schools on Facebook. You can read a lot about a lot of instances like this. But it's, of course, it's important to understand that this country was founded on slavery. It's important to understand what that was. But I think, obviously, you've been aware of this for many years, and a lot of people became starkly aware of it this summer, that a lot of people can't connect the dots between slavery and between the systemic racism in our culture today. Are you saying that needs to be an important part of teaching slavery or teaching that part of our history?
I would absolutely agree with that, but I will also add one additional piece to it. Not only is the institutional slavery a foundation of this country's beginning, but also the taking away of land of indigenous people that, you know, right now I'm sitting on land that typically would belong to the Iowa and Meskwaki people. And so we have to think about that, both of those things simultaneously being a part of the foundation of America. And I will admit to you that growing up in this environment, I was so immersed in what my teachers taught me that I did not see the connection. I did not see the correlation between these two things. I recently posted an article on the Mapping Racial Trauma Facebook page where it talks about researchers who went to a particular area in Mississippi that was known to have a large amount of lynchings happening there in the earlier 20th century, the late 19th century. And they have found a connection that this same county with this large amount of lynchings is also still responsible for the most number of corporal punishment cases, that they are still beating black children in this school district in the same place where all of these lynchings occurred. So there is a connection that is being excavated on so many different levels about how this type of trauma has not gone anywhere. It's just mutated into different forms that most of us have found acceptable to the point where we don't say anything about it. So it's unnerving at times to think about, but these connections still do remain.
The focus of your panel is teaching Black history in an anti-Black state. So in saying that, are you saying that it's important for teachers to understand that their students of color are living in a racist culture and therefore teaching Black history is going to interact with the present moment for them in a really powerful way?
It absolutely is. I think that once we get very clear and start having some really sincere and deep truth about the foundations of the place that we live in, of the place that we call home, I think we can have deeper discussions about what this means. By titling the presentation, I think Professor King came up with the title about what it means to teach Black history in an anti-Black state. We have to think about it not only within the context of Iowa, but also in the context of the United States, that the entire United States was founded on those principles. Now, some states did better than others in terms of working towards abolition and anti-racism, but anti-Blackness is a large part of how we move about our daily lives. And we have to think about the fact that we have to teach about a segment of our population that is so instrumental to the development of this nation. And you have to do it in a place, in a society, in an environment where anti-Blackness is rampant. It feels like a conflict, but I don't know of a better word to describe what this entire thing is anyway. It's important work to engage in.
Well, and you, we have a terrible example just this summer from an incident in that took place with a Charles City baseball team. One black player on the team and the fans from the opposing school were yelling terrible, terrible racist things at this young man. And the game was not stopped. he reported what was going on to the umpire, and the umpire asked him if he wanted to stop this game. So placing the responsibility on the shoulders of a child. But when we're having incidents like this happen right now in our communities, what do teachers need to know and think about that as they approach their teaching? I'm sure a lot of teachers want to draw a line between that kind of thing and what's happening in their classrooms.
Right. And let me be more specific, because I think it's important for Iowa listeners to understand, if they haven't heard of the story. I mean, it's widely available in pretty much every news publication, but it's important to say, you know, the language that was used against this young man. And it started off with just like, hey, number 17, you're garbage. Or they would start calling him things like Colin, and he assumed that it was about Colin Kaepernick. But when someone says that to a young man, a teenager, you should have been George Floyd, that added to what I think is a form of racialized trauma. So knowing that, I feel like teachers and administrators, and this is not all of them, I believe that there are ones who will be willing to step forward on this, and this also includes coaches and administrators, that we need an abolitionist approach to handling racialized trauma in our schools and in our sports teams. What that means is that I need his teammates, I need the coaches, I need the administrators, I need the athletic directors to put something on the line for that baseball player. They need to put something on the line, and it probably won't take much from them. But for example, they could have stopped the game. They could have refused to play with this team again. They could have reported this coach of the opposing team to an athletic association. There has to be some type of protocol to figure out how we are going to put something on the line for this player, because he should not have had to handle that himself. And Iowa has a long abolitionist history. And I think if we were to look back at that history and understand how we can connect both of these things together at the same time, it means that folks in Iowa know what it means to put something on the line for what's right. It should not have been up to that young man to do that. It should have been up to people who had something to give, that had power, that could have said, if you can't treat one of our players okay, we're not going to play this game today. And that's the response that I was waiting for, and that I'm still waiting for. And so when we think about teachers in our classrooms, they can take the same abolitionist approach and say, these things will not continue to happen in my classroom. I'm going to think about how I can make this a school-wide initiative, a district-wide initiative. We have to put something on the line for students here in Iowa and across the United States.
We are living in extraordinary times in so many ways. And of course, what our schools will look like anywhere in the country in about 3 or 4 weeks is still a very open question. How do you think about COVID-19 in relationship to the needs of our students of color? And given that we are in this moment where racial justice has been paramount all summer long, and students may be coming back into schools, may not be physically coming back into schools. I mean, this is, how do we juggle all of these things?
Right. I think this is an unprecedented time where people are trying to figure this out and do it in a way that honors teachers and the wonderful work that they do, and also making sure that our students get what they need in terms of being educated. But it's critical that if we were to think about this work in the context of Black and brown students here in Iowa, we have to consider that their racial identity is often coupled with other identities that make it scraped underneath. So if we're thinking about a Black child that also has a learning disability, we have to consider both of those at the same time. If we have a Latino child that is dealing with issues of, like, will we have enough to eat because of what's happening with this pandemic? Will I have a computer to be able to submit my work online to do these things? We have to think about those decisions together. I would say from what I've been discovering so far, there have been two trends that I've been able to pick out. One is that Black and brown students who have been in racially traumatic environments where there may have been bullying, intimidation, physical violence, low expectations from teachers, when they are in the home environment, none of that happens. And they're able to achieve their work in ways that or accomplish, you know, their studies in ways that they had never had the opportunity to do before because of outside forces. But then I also have to look at the fact that the expectations and the assumptions that we're making about what families are able to do at this time can't be overlooked. So when we say, hey, you should submit your homework online, what are all the assumptions that are included within that piece? You're assuming that, A, I have a device. B, I have working internet strong enough to sit and work on my device, that I can send this in, that I won't have any trouble with this assignment, that I'm also going to have to be able to deal with, like, how can my learning disabilities and my accommodations be addressed during the middle of all of this? So it's going to be very interesting to see how all of this plays out. I mean, I think recent news has shown us that when a teenager didn't do her online schoolwork, a judge sent her to juvenile detention inside of during the middle of a pandemic, yeah. And she's still there. So we have to think about the ways in which racial identity and class identity and ability are going to be intertwined in all of this. I think everybody's working hard. We just have to make sure that we're paying attention even more closely.
Stephanie Jones, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you.
Stephanie Jones is an assistant professor of education at Grinnell College and the founder of Mapping Racial Trauma in Schools. She'll be a part of the Carter Center for K-12 Black History Education's third annual Teaching Black History Conference. It's online this year. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.